Hi, this is Jeff Seymour, and welcome to the podcast. Today, I'm going to talk about character and why trying to get into character is usually a mistake. I'll explain. I was in class recently, and a very conscientious, hard-working, very serious actress asked me, "What about getting into character?" There is a very kind of romantic, almost religious way that I think a lot of actors want to be. They feel like to be the ultimate artist, that you do a certain amount of work, and it's always a lot. And then I guess in a best case scenario, you're so good and you're so, I don't know, capable of morphing because you're the true creative character, actor, person, that you can actually kind of, with just a little bit of encouragement, you can kind of become these other people. And so you get into character, you study, you define that character, you give that character some sort of back history, some sort of life that you've written out and pondered and thought about, and you've gotten all the facts of the scene, and you kind of digest all of it. And then I suppose in a best case scenario, what happens is you get into character. And then I guess in theory, this character would, you know, kind of take over a little bit. This character would make the artistic expression aspect of your work easier because, after all, you've created the character, you've given this character a line of thought, of thinking, you know, you've kind of Frankenstein this character, and now the character kind of takes over. And then what happens as a result of, you know, getting into said character, then, you know, when you say your lines, then your character's hands fall upon them. And so your intonation, your expression, you know, how you do your thing is kind of now being modulated by this character that you have gotten into. I mean, ultimately, if one could actually conjure, if one could actually be one of these actors, you know, they kind of get into the costume, and then they got that little tick they do with their hand, and then, you know, and then they put their focus on that backstory and, you know, where they just were the moment before, and then like click, clack, clunk, all of a sudden, oh, lo and behold, we got someone else. Someone else is home suddenly. Yeah, sure sounds fun. I think it would make a better independent feature. I actually, what am I saying? Of course, they've made a billion of them where people, you know, they're actors and then they get into character and they can't get out and then they end up killing someone because I thought I was the serial murderer. I mean, they've made a lot of these. I can think of a few. Do we really think that happens, though? I think that's one of the great sales pitches of many of these old school methods is that that's what happens, and then you do that because that listen to me, that would be the best. Absolutely, if there was a way that I could go off, or in my dressing room, or just a moment before, kind of click clock right in the character, and then my character would walk out, hit his mark, and start doing his thing. Of course, man, I would love that. Yeah, because then my character could take over, and being that it's the character that I designed for the part, well, me thinks the character then would do all the right groovy stuff, right? And in a sense, I could almost just sit in the passenger seat and go on this wild ride. Yeah. I've never really seen that occur in a sane world. I just never have. I think that's one of these things we aspire to, and people take this stuff very seriously, you know. I had another person ask me after watching my class here in LA. She made a couple of comments. One was she was kind of shocked at how quickly people started their scenes. She said they just kind of get up and then they just started. And I said, yeah, like, but what do you mean? What else should they do? She goes, well, there was no preparation time. Again, it's one of those notions, you know, it's kind of romantic. It's cool. It's like I go over there and I kind of get into character. This is the problem I have with this whole culture of acting, you see, is that we get distracted by all of these kind of utopian ideas of what, you know, is the way that we get into a point where we, man, all I ever focus on with actors is know what you're talking about and speak the truth. Everything takes care of itself. It always does. Yeah, I never get into character. I don't get up in the morning and get into character. I don't start focusing on Jeff's character. Now, I know many of you are thinking, yes, but that's real life, and, you know, this is acting, and, you know, you are Jeff, so you wouldn't need to get into character. And I get all that, and that's a very good point. But you know I'm Jeff because of what I do and say. That's what defines Jeff. Jeff's preoccupation, Jeff's conversation, Jeff's focus, Jeff's desires, Jeff's shortcomings, Jeff's, you know, insecurities. Those are the things that make Jeff. And when those are on display, one could say, ah, that's Jeff. I'm meeting Jeff. This is Jeff. This is what Jeff does. You know, I've probably mentioned here, I watch these, I know it's kind of morbid, but I find it fascinating for the study of human nature. I watch all those murder shows, you know, the real ones where, and I've mentioned it before, I'm always fascinated when they find the lunatic, murderer, killer, whatever, you know, dismembering person, and they put them in a room and they speak to them. And the way that most of these people speak, I find not only you know, stunning, but always a great lesson in human behavior, in justification, in how people see things, and how people see themselves, and so on and so forth. And so this guy's actually kind of had a history of unfortunate incidents. You know, his house burned down. He was able to save his kids, but he couldn't save his wife. She died in the fire. He got a big insurance check. He had some horses that, you know, unfortunately, they died in a barn fire. He got a big, you know, insurance check. Now, his son that he saved from that first fire where his wife died is grown up now. And I believe in the story, he starts asking questions. You know, he starts to become a little nosy as to what really went down. And his father, his flesh and blood father, saw that as a problem and then somehow orchestrated a moment where he'd have the boy under a big truck working in the garage, and then the jack stands would fall and the truck crushed the boy. The cops figure out quickly that there was something hinky here, and they look into the guy's past and they figure it out. Now they start really crunching on the guy in the room. And this is the stuff I always find fascinating. At first, the guy's just absolutely will not admit to anything. He says, I did not do anything. This was just a pure accident. Well, then why did you leave your son under the car when the coroner said he wasn't dead? You left him. You didn't try and jack the truck up. You didn't make a call immediately. You walked to the house. You asked your wife to call, and all the while, you know, your son is dying, and the guy just kept saying, you know, I don't know what you're talking about, and putting it off. Then finally, they break him, and now he's willing to admit this. He's willing to admit, and this is what he says. He says, "Look, I'll be straight with you. When I saw my son under the truck, I saw, you know, I thought it was an opportunity. It was a good opportunity right there. But I did not do it. It was an accident. I admit, it was an opportunity presenting itself, but I did not cause the accident." Okay. Now let's examine that for a second. Imagine playing that part. right? I mean, you heard the lunacy, correct? He says, I saw the opportunity. Well, of course, the cops knew right then they had the killer. What kind of a lunatic frames it that way? I saw the opportunity? Now, you know, you could give this to an actor and the actor would say, oh my goodness, this is insane. Why? I mean, he's incriminating. What kind of a person would say that about his own flesh and blood? It doesn't even make any sense. Who wrote this drivel? This is crap. No one would ever say this. Well, okay, someone did. And let's look at character. You know, when you hear that story, don't you kind of imagine a kind of a whack guy, obviously a sociopath, he has no empathy, he's a narcissist, it's all about him. All of these things, you know, become very clear when you hear something like that. But you see, the actor would then think, oh my goodness, this is a, wow, what interesting character this is going to be to work on. I mean, this guy, he's killed this person and that person, and then he burned a barn and killed his, he had some champion Belgian horses, he got a lot of money for that. I mean, you know, this guy is, wow. They had a lot of conversations with him. They had clips of him and pictures of him. There was nothing in any of the pictures. There was nothing in any of the clips that would lead you to believe this man was crazy. Not at all. They really had nothing on him. But then they hear this. Now, isn't it interesting that a person could say that and not realize what they're saying? Now realize how insane that sounds. You're the kid's father, and your framing of that moment is, I'll admit, you know, I saw the opportunity. An actor would think forever, how do you justify that? How could I possibly get into character? I guess the idea would be here is that if you did enough research, you could then, you know, understand the character enough to where I guess you could just kind of pop into the skin of that character. And then, as I said earlier, your character would take over. And then your character could kind of make sense of this and render these lines and these scenes in a way that we go, well, yeah, there it is, authentic lunacy. I don't understand that process. It sounds magical to me. It sounds like a wish, a hope. It feels like a hoodwink. It just sounds like this myth that, you know, is so romantic and right in what it purports to do that any good artist would think, yeah, man, and I'll go find the jeans that the guy would wear and I'll find the exact Doc Siders that he would have on and I will, you know, I will, I don't know, maybe he'd like choose tobacco. No, yeah, maybe he does, and I'll have a little tobacco and then I'll put all this together and then all of a sudden, rawr, I'll just kind of, all of a sudden, now I'm in now and I'm going to drop in. And then right before the scene, I'll go over and I'll get into character and people will watch me. And from my back, they will suddenly see this like metamorphosis of something. And then he turned around and where did Jeff go? I've never seen that happen. I kind of like to believe in it, though. I would like to believe in it. It just sounds so fun. It sounds so cool. It's like, it'd be like Bigfoot. You know, when I was a kid in Virginia, there was a thing that the grown-ups would do, particularly if they liked you, the little kid, they'd tell you, you see, to your delight, that they were going to take you snipe hunting one day. And of course, as a kid, you'd say, well, what's a snipe? And they'd say, well, it's a bird. But it's a non-flying bird. And they run along the tops of fences, long wooden fences, you know, through the countrysides, you know, these long wooden fences made of rustic wood logs. You've seen them. Yes, this is Virginia, remember? And that the idea is that they do this and they travel at night. And so what they do, since they like you, and they tell you, you know what, kid? You know what? Maybe we're going to let Jeff hold the bag. I say, the bag? What do you mean? Well, you have to wait at the end of the, you know, where the fence ends, and you got to sit there with the bag open. And we do this at night. And then eventually what we do is we tap, you see way down there, and we drive the snipe and it goes right into your bag. And you got to close it, you know. And you think, oh, man. And you go tell your friends, yeah, I talked to those older guys, and they're going to take me snipe hunting, and I'm going to get to hold the bag, you know. Yeah. I guess in theory what would happen is you would go out there and sit there with the bag, you know, poor little kid, until you fell asleep, scared, shaking the whole time, you know, hearing coyotes in the distance or whatever. You know, there's no snipe. I'm not saying that getting in the character is like going snipe hunting, but kind of. You know how I think you get into character, right? You just do and say what the character does, and you tell the truth, and you make sense out of it. Now, some of you could say right now, okay, yes, but if you don't get into character, I mean, if I am just me, then how do I make sense of something which is senseless? How will I, as the character on my own, as the actor, make sense of such lunacy? Because clearly, as soon as I say, you know, it was an opportunity, I saw the opportunity, you know, then they're going to know I'm guilty. What kind of a father frames a moment like that? Well, obviously, a narcissist and a sociopath. So what does that mean? He's just crazy? No. What you do is you justify it as he would. Now, where you run into the stumbling block is you say, yes, but I can't justify it. Yes, this is, I mean, if we're going to get into character, here we go. But this is really how we do it. We make sense out of what we're doing. We make sense out of why we did it. We make sense out of our desires. So how do I make sense of that? Well, the first thing I do is not put Jeff into the situation, because Jeff wouldn't do all those things. So I leave that part of Jeff away, because that's just going to come into conflict. Jeff can't be used in this situation with regard to, you know, killing people and pushing cars on people and then saying inane things. How do you think he justified that? You know, I think about that. I think, here's a guy who thinks he's being very clever. So what he decides to do is he's going to admit to a half-truth, you see? And by admitting to the half-truth, he thinks, that'll exonerate him, because they'll think like, look, we got a straight shooter here. The guy admitted that he saw the opportunity. He saw it. He's not going to kid us. He was sitting right there in front of him up on jack stands, that big old opportunity weighing 3 tons. He saw it, but he didn't do it, you see? So the way this particular character justifies his actions is he decides, okay, look, you know, they're grilling me, they're grinding me. I just can't say no. I'm gonna come halfway straight with them. In his mind, he thinks they're gonna go, hey, you know what? The guy's telling the truth, because look, he admitted to that. I mean, he admitted he's not playing games with us. It was obvious that was an opportunity right there, and he called it what it was. But then he told us, no, he didn't do the other. So, you know, this guy's probably a straight shooter. I mean, who would admit, you know, something like that? Do you see how that might be kind of what the guy was thinking? I mean, I kind of think, of course, that's what he was thinking. Of course. Why else would he do it? He wasn't just blathering. This guy had been getting on and collecting money. You know, he's a clever fellow. He didn't have Tourette's. He just didn't say things. He was very clever about the way he did it. He got the thing. You know, he fooled a lot of people for quite some time, but then he got greedy. You know, he flew a little too close to the sun, and bang, it finally caught up with him, because somebody looked at his history and said, wait, this guy's got the worst luck in the world, or he is a, you know, narcissist, a sociopath, and a murderer. And of course, he turned out to be the latter. So, how do we get into character? We stop thinking about getting into character. That's how we get into character. You see, and this is part of the acting culture that I'm really just trying to get rid of, because it actually is the very thing that impedes your work. It impedes your work because you have this preoccupation with the idea that like some spirit is going to enter your body, or there's this thing, it's going to come over you. There's going to be this warmth going through your veins. The blood is going to get warm, and you're going to suddenly go, oh, something's happening to me. You know, and you're going to keep waiting for this moment. Meantime, we've got a lot of work to do. And you've got a scene to act in, and you've got sense to make, and you've got truth to tell, and you've got people that you need to persuade, and things that you've got to make happen. And I swear to you, if you just focus on getting that stuff done, and you make sense out of why you're doing it, guess what? You have become the character. And so that thing you were hoping for, it happened. But it only happened because it is the result. It is the net result. It is the byproduct of you figuring out what you're doing, what you need to do, what you need to get done with regard to your character's aim in a particular scene. And then you just go and you get it done. But quit being preoccupied with like the witchcraft of it, the black art of it, because that is the thing that just takes actors down, and it just makes it so self-serious. This is when I just want to get out of the business, when I see this overdone in the sun, preoccupation with, it just feels so pretentious to me. Really? I'm going to go get into character? Really? And then what? Do we have a safe word? How do I get out of character again? Because I got into character, and then do I just get to get out of character? Can I do it? Can I just pull back on the reins? Whoa, little character. And then I can just jump off and everything's fine? Or do I have to have a safe word? Do I need a safe word? Does somebody yell it out when they say cut, and then they got to look at a list? What's Jeff's safe word? And they yell it. Listen, I don't mean to make fun. I certainly don't mean to make fun of the woman that asked this question. She was being very conscientious. She wanted to hear from the guy who is, you know, Mr. Straight Talker, you know, what I thought of that. So in no way do I mean to be making fun of her or the question. I'm making fun of this culture of acting, which I think is the very thing that ends up taking most actors down. It is a distraction. It's just a distraction, man. You just, you know, you want the character train to come along and pick you up. And if it doesn't, then you think you haven't rubbed the, you know, genie bottle correctly, or you haven't done enough work or made enough lists or thought hard enough. And so then you've ended up, you know, creating a speed bump for yourself that you didn't need. Does it not make sense that if you could simply focus on the character's needs, desires, that alone would show us who you are. I don't know how you say, I saw the opportunity in a room. I don't know how you say those words and the people listening not think of you in suddenly a very particular way. I saw another one where a fellow, he had murdered a woman. He's sitting there with a cop now, and it's all done. And, you know, he's going away. He's admitted to all this. And as he's sitting there, he says, listen, I got to ask you, am I going to be able to have a private bathroom? Because I got kind of a shy bladder, and, you know, I can't really, is the system going to be able to provide me with some kind of private bathroom? This was so obtuse suddenly to come out of nowhere that a guy questioning him, the detective that was with him kind of wrapping everything up, just looked at him. And you could see this in real time, of course, because, you know, it's being taped and they're showing you the actual tape. And the cop's kind of shaking his head and he's saying, Cliff, I'll ask, I really don't know about that. And he's just looking at him and you could see he's thinking, what is this guy asking me? Right now, moments after all of this has come to light, I mean, you know, again, I look at this stuff because of what I do. I know I have a fascination with this kind of human behavior because it doesn't just speak to the morbid aspect of you know, how people behave, but it is really the thought process, the fact that you could take something as outrageous as that comment, and there it is. And the guy doesn't come off crazy at all other than having said that. There was nothing else about him that was insane. Nothing aside from this preoccupation. Okay, so how do we justify the guy? We say, well, look, he knows. If you asked him, he'd say, I'm going away. I know I'm going away. I did it. I admitted to it. I took them to the body. I'm just saying I have a bashful bladder. And I, you know, I'll do my time. I'm not saying I won't. I'm just wondering because I've seen these movies where in the prisons, apparently, there's just like a toilet out in the middle. And it's right there in the room, and you, there's just two bunk beds. I mean, how I can't, I'm not going to be able to pee. Is that so wrong that I ask about my, you know, peeing situation? Yeah. But you see, you could look at those lines and think, okay, I don't get this. So I'm going away for 20 years, and now I'm going to start talking about my bashful bladder? You know, yeah, because people do. And so we don't judge our character. You see, you want to get into character? Here's the perfect way to do it. Just make sense out of everything you're saying. Say it. Tell the truth. Pursue it. Do it. That's all you need to do. And they'll put you in the right costumes. And they'll light you the way they need to. And they'll put in the creepy music if we need it. They'll do everything else. All you need to do is make sense of what you're saying. Just make sense of it. I am all about the work. I am all about knowing what you're talking about. I am all about looking at that script like forensically and being able to read it as a transcript and figure out what's going on with these humans. But you see, my preoccupation has more to do with just the human condition, the human expression, the human experience. I'm not interested in acting. Acting is stupid. It's dumb. Nobody wants to look at it. Why are you talking about it? Why do we sit around and talk about it? Why do we need to cry? Someone else sent me an email asking me, they said that, you know, a couple of the actors in a class and they were watching, auditing, and then they were kind of, you know, weren't working well. And then, you know, the teacher got into some of the prodding I talk about and got both of them to cry. And they both started weeping in class. And then they did the scene, and this fellow, somebody I've trained with, said, yeah, it was better. So what about that? Yeah, I don't doubt that. And I know this is one of those acting class things. Get people to cry. Just cry. Yeah, is there anything? No, that the crying is good, man. I'll admit I cry. And as I've gotten older, I cry a lot easier. I feel like I'm going to cry now. I mean, I get it. And if you think about it, think of the mechanics. You're in class, you're nervous, you're in front of a bunch of people, everyone's staring, you got to do well, you know, this teacher's a big shot, you're nervous, and then it's not going well, and you're feeling all fakakad, and you just don't know what to do, and the teacher starts pressing some buttons, and all of a sudden, boo-hoo, and you're crying, and snot's coming out of your nose, and you're weeping in front of people, and what is really happening? You're letting go, man. You're letting go, and you're not worried about the embarrassment, and you're just allowing yourself to be so human and real in front of these people that you just start weeping, and you're crying now, and you're having this real experience. I mean, talk about dropping the walls. I don't know what is more kind of revealing than sitting sobbing in front of a bunch of other adults. And then you dry your eyes and you blow your nose and you go to work. I mean, does it make sense your work? Oh, well, of course. It'd be so many things that you could gain from that. You would have done that. So now you've got confidence. I exposed myself, man. I had a real moment. This stuff just went down in real time, ladies and gentlemen. Now I'm going to do my scene. Of course you're going to be what? You're going to have more confidence. You're going to be more relaxed. You just had a big cry. You're going to feel a little more connected with yourself because whatever was buzzing and your mind was all going around, you just kind of pooped it all out emotionally. Boom, it's gone. Now you're starting afresh. Yes. Why don't I do that in class? Because I don't want to see people cry. I'm just not interested in it. It takes time, and then we got to cry. And my big reason is I run a professional class. I run a class that's like I'm trying to show you how it works in the real world, you know, and and I'm teaching acting and about the business and everything along the way, I don't want you thinking that if you're ever having a tough time, the way we're going to fix it is you're going to have a big old meltdown cry on a set. That's never going to happen. It shouldn't. If it does, they'll get around it. What are we going to do? Here we are. You know, we're paying you. We got to get this before we lose light. Somebody get him some Kleenex. Let's get past it and move on. Of course. But I don't think that's a good idea. It's a carnival trick. Yeah, it works. I don't do it. I don't believe in it. My game is getting you to do the great work without having to make you cry. I don't want to make you cry to get there. I could also come over and give you a good wallop in the stomach. It's just spit up a little of your lunch, wipe your mouth and do it. I bet you'd be better then too. I could make you skip rope. I could. I bet you if you skip rope a whole bunch in front of a bunch of people and then you hand the rope over, as soon as you start to catch your breath, start the scene. I guarantee you the scene will be better. I guarantee you. I think we've got to get away, folks, from this old acting myth, religion, nonsense stuff, man. And for these people that work this hard and do all that work, I swear to you, every time I ask them the most simple questions about what's happening in a scene, what's going on, a moment, something that any human being would know the answer to, they're always stuck. And they're stuck because they were too focused on the mechanics of acting, on the acting part, on what they're going to do with the acting, about what they're feeling, about what they're substituting, about what's coming up, about what beat we're in, about a whole bunch of other things because of this culture, this thing that they feel they want to respect and they want to hold in high regard. So they want to do the right thing, and they're so focused on the mechanics of it, on the religion of it, on the kind of Skype hunting, I'm going to become the character of it, that the material, the actual fact, the actual real story and the why of it is not really clearly understood. Hey, that's what I think, but you know, I will prove this anytime, you see, because I'm the teacher that will throw down. That's why I do the podcasts. So if you want to see what I'm talking about, then why don't you just bravely come and audit one of my classes and watch me make sense of what all I just said. That's my challenge. Okay, folks. Thanks for listening. You have been listening to a Real Life Actor podcast. This is Jeff Seymour. Real Life Actor podcasts can be found on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, and Podomatic. Please tell your friends. And if you're in the Los Angeles area and you'd like to audit one of my classes, send me an email at jeff@reallifeactor.com. Thanks for listening.